We had real football on Thursday night, even if it wasn't beautiful football. Why Mike Pettine was the man of the hour. A Packers offense that looked unrecognizable. More struggles for Trubisky and the Bears offense. And we're talking the Antonio Brown situation as well. It's a very special opening night episode of the MMQB NFL Deep Dive Podcast. Hello and welcome to this very special edition of the MMQB Deep Dive Podcast. I am Gary Gramling, he is Andy Benoit, and we are officially into the NFL season for the second straight year, Andy. A defensive struggle to start things off.
I kind of liked it, although, honestly, I liked it because it was football that counted, and I'm going to like any football game I see. I like almost every football game I see, I guess. This one felt a little more like an offensive struggle to me than a defensive struggle.
Yep, I agree entirely. And there was a tension to it. And look, you have a close game. Points are at a premium. You're kind of it's that tension of is one big play going to break this up? And we got that big play. It just happened in the second quarter.
Correct. Yes, it did. And it was Rodgers got hot on that drive, and the offense finally found some rhythm when they did it. And he finds Marquez Vantes scantling downfield. And I wonder, you know, I'd like to see what Chicago's coverage looks like from atop on that, because that was, they didn't have a safety in the middle of the field. It wasn't a situation that usually there would be a safety there. So you wonder if the big offensive play came a little bit on a rare defensive mistake, which would be kind of fitting for this game because it was a little bit of a sloppy week one game.
It was. And look, let's start this off. And by the way, we are going to get into a little bit of Antonio Brown at the end of the show. He was still probably the story of the day in the NFL. But we're going to start this off on a positive note with the man of the hour, the hero of the night, Mike Pettine.
Yeah.
This Packers defense, I have been predicting glory soon for them, and this was a good start for them.
All right. Nice of you to fit that in as well. I was impressed thoroughly with the defense. One thing that stood out is they didn't move their personnel around quite as much as they did last year. The corners played the same sides all game. Tremont Williams was the slot guy. The safeties were interchangeable because they naturally will be. But they weren't as all over the map with the way they deployed their secondary. They were very diverse in a positive way with how they deployed their fronts. And I thought, Gary, that is absolutely what dictated the game. When Green Bay lined up in these heavy fronts, especially the double A gap stuff early on, Chicago was off balance. Trubisky looked a little bit reactionary. And my sense was they struggled with some of the coverage concepts that they saw behind those fronts. And Green Bay would bring pressure and they'd drop out of the pressure. They did all kinds of things with the way they presented their pass rush. And in the second half, edge blitzes, especially with Darnell Savage, which I think we're going to see a lot of this year. Amos does it as well, but Darnell Savage on edge blitzes, mm-hmm. that was a big factor as well. So Green Bay basically played offense the way they played. They took an offensive approach to their defense.
Yeah, and we're going to get to Trubisky a little bit later in the show, obviously. Another shaky outing. The one thing that kind of stuck out to me, the drive that ended in the Amos interception, which really was the one drive that the Bears really mounted in this game. It almost felt like they were kind of inviting the Bears into the red zone and just sort of assuming that once it went down there, there's just no way they were going to get beat in the red zone.
Yeah, they got a little bit conservative on that drive, and I bet you if you asked Mike Pettine now, and maybe he's what you just said, maybe that would be his answer. Yeah, bend but don't break. We knew they needed a touchdown, so you're calling the game differently when you know they need a touchdown because they basically have to go 30 yards further to score points. So maybe that's some of it. I bet you Pettine would say if we had that to do again, we would have just kept with some of the pressure fronts early, because when they went to a straight four-man rush, and they rushed four a lot tonight, but when we say straight four-man rush, we mean they show four men and rush four men. We're not talking about these dodgeball-looking defenses where everyone's walking around. When they did that, Trubisky was very comfortable, and he found a rhythm, and he worked underneath very well. When they took the offensive approach on defense in Green Bay and came after him, the Bears did nothing offensively, aside from a few back shoulder throws to Allen Robinson.
All right, let's take a little break from the Packers defense dominance over the Bears offense here and go to the Packers offense, which it didn't quite look like, well, it didn't quite look like I thought it would look like. I'm guessing you kind of felt the same way about it, Andy.
Well, let's just be honest. It looked terrible if we're just going with how it looked. And I imagine those guys are not going to enjoy watching the film on it. And it's great. Look, to go on the road and win a game when your offense was so out of sync and looked so not ill-prepared, but just rusty. Let's say it's rusty. To win that game still against the defending division champ on the road, that's huge. So you steal wins when you play poorly. That's what good teams do, but you won't do that every week. They have a lot to clean up, and the part you and I talked a little bit about it before we got on air, we couldn't help ourselves. The part that stood out is there was not a lot of play action, which we thought there would be this year because it's a LaFleur scheme, and LaFleur comes from McVay and Shanahan, and they're the young play action gurus. There wasn't hardly any of that in this game. And the zone running game did not get going, which might be why we didn't see any of the play action. So this did not, if I didn't know who was coaching this, I would never say, well, this offense is an offshoot of what McVay does or what Shanahan does. It didn't look like that at all. So it's an offense looking for its identity very much. And that's probably to be expected because, as we've talked about, Rodgers as a timing type of quarterback is not the type of quarterback that you associate with this offense. And Rodgers played a lot on his usual timing tonight. He extended plays, and look, it worked out for him.
Yeah, it did. And look,
it worked out just enough for them. Let's be clear. I mean, yeah. Exactly. It worked out a little bit. I'm sure it's not as pretty on film as it was on TV, but it worked out enough.
You know, from 2,000 miles away, the feeling I had was they kind of got in there and the bullets started flying and they had the rough first quarter and they just kind of said, you know, let's do a little tempo. Let's go back to the way Rodgers played under Mike McCarthy a little bit. Not exactly the same way. We saw more two tight end stuff tonight. But
a lot of two tight end stuff. Yeah, a lot.
It just felt like it was kind of like, you know what? We're not quite ready for prime time with this offense. Let's fall back on Aaron Rodgers at the playmaker. And there were enough plays made for them to get through here.
I thought that two tight end stuff was really interesting because and I thought maybe Green Bay would become a two tight end offense this year because I don't think they're particularly deep at wide receiver. They also, Devontae Adams, and I know LaFleur feels that Devontae Adams can be excellent in the slot, and I'm sure he can be. I don't think of him as a pure slot guy, and this system's a little different, but I don't think they have a lot of boundary receivers, a lot of big, tall, long guys, Geronimo Allison, Valdez-Scantling. Adams is not tall, but he plays tall. They don't really have a diverse receiving core, and they were deep at tight end before Jay Sternberger went on IR. So I thought all along they might be a two tight end offense ultimately. My guess, though, is the reason they did it tonight was to keep the Bears simple. When you're in a two tight end offense, the defense tends to play base, or you regulate them a little bit more. You get a more predictable static defense. And like you said, maybe they're an offense that knows they've got some work to do. Rodgers hinted at that coming into this game. So they probably did want to keep it relatively simple on their end.
Yeah, I even thought Rodgers, you know, early in the game, he was just a little off target. You saw it all night. You know, he threw one at Jimmy Graham's feet on that play that looked like it might have been a kick into an interception. He was off target on a throw to Adams. He threw behind Valdez-Scantling on that second down play when they were trying to kill the clock. He was even, you know, he underthrew Valdez-Scantling a little bit on that big play as well. He seemed rusty tonight.
And sometimes that can look like it's all on the quarterback. And Rodgers, as great as he is, when he is struggling, I think you do see some of that stuff. We saw it at times last year, but maybe that was his injury and his knee factoring in. But it can look like it's all on the quarterback. A lot of that's just the details in the passing game as well. You're a little bit off because the receiver was a little bit off where he's supposed to be. Or the dropback timing didn't sync perfectly with the route timing. That's a big deal in this system. And watching it tonight, you never got the sense that there was no rhythm at all. So you never got the sense that the quarterback was dropping back in total synchronization with the receivers running the route. So ball wasn't coming out at the top of the drop. Rodgers was extending plays within the pocket. More often than not, the Bears were collapsing the pocket anyway. Mm-hmm. It just was a bad-looking offense overall, pass game and run game. But again, look, they survived it.
They did. All right, we're going to get some more Bears stuff in just a moment here, but I have to let you know, the MMQB NFL podcast is unveiling a new lineup. It's going to start Monday, this upcoming Monday after the Week 1 Sunday games. So get a pen, get a piece of paper, or get something to tattoo it on your chest. Do it backwards, though, so when you look in the mirror, you'll be able to read everything that's going on here. The Monday morning podcast will stay, appropriately I might say here, on Monday morning, but we'll have a rotating cast of hosts. It's not necessarily going to be me and Andy every week. Sometimes it'll be one of us. Sometimes it'll be, neither of us. It'll be a surprise every week. You'll get a little bit of maybe some Jenny Vrentis, maybe some Connor Orr, maybe some Jonathan Jones. It'll be fun. You'll enjoy it. We'll still have the full breakdown and analysis of all of Sunday's games. On Tuesday, if you have any questions, send them to Albert Breer for his mailbag show. That's coming up every Tuesday. You'll have to send the questions on Monday, by the way. On Wednesdays, you have Jenny Vrentis and Connor Orr rounding up news from around the league. Andy and I are back every Thursday with a deep dive show. We're going to look ahead X's and O's trends. We're going to preview the headlining games for the upcoming Sunday, and we're going to take a couple questions for the mini mailbag as well. You can start sending those in if you want. Talkback at themmqb.com. Friday, Jonathan Jones is going to catch everything we missed during the week. He's also going to be talking to a lot of interesting people from around the league about football and more. If you don't subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, you will regret it. And all of these shows, they're for free, you know, Andy.
I do know that. That's a big reason why I listen to them.
Yeah. I mean, truthfully, you should be sending Andy and I money.
A little bit here and there.
Pay us money. Yeah. Just look. Most people do. So if you're one of those listeners who aren't, get on the ball here. Send money.
It'd be humiliating to find out that you were not sending money when everyone else was sending money.
It really would. Don't be an outsider. Don't be different. Pay us money. All right, let's get to the Bears. Mitch Trubisky, Andy. He was not comfortable in this game again. He seems to be regressing, and the only time he really looked like an NFL quarterback making strides toward being a solid NFL quarterback was that 2-minute drill at the end where, as we discussed earlier, Packers played a little soft at that point.
Well, I think we have officially reached a point where we need to install a Gary Grambling regulator on all Mitch Trubisky analysis and just take 30% off the extremity of it, because it's we've gone over this. What weren't you calling him Blake Bortles North or something at this time last year?
Bortles North. I coined that, and I saw some other people throwing that around. He is Bortles North.
Yeah, and then NFC Championship, what you said after that was basically what you just said here. Last time we saw, not NFC Championship, excuse me, the wild card game. But last time we saw Trubisky against Philadelphia, it was kind of that same deal. He got hot in the 2-minute drill, but it was a little bit inconsistent otherwise. I think it's very simple in this one, Gary, from what we can see so far. And it's, again, it's week one. Nobody's seen the film yet. What it appeared to be is when, back to what we said earlier, when Green Bay was on the offensive, Trubisky didn't look as comfortable. When Green Bay was back, and especially, I bet you, in zone coverage more often than not when that was the case, which was not often because Green Bay is a matchup defense, Trubisky looked a lot more comfortable. So it's just a young, wide-eyed QB. I thought the point that Chris Collinsworth made about Trubisky's feet being a little steadier, that was a good point. That's something to keep an eye on, and that's encouraging. They're going to have to continue to build with that, though. It's gimmicky is the wrong word, because it's a well-constructed offense. But, Gary, they have a lot of moving pieces, and I wouldn't be surprised if it takes them a little while to figure everything out. Tariq Cohen was basically their slot receiver all night. Mm-hmm. That's not a role he has thrived in the last few years. He can do that, but that's not a role he thrives in. They're not to his best ability. So I think they're still figuring out a little bit of what they are.
Yeah, not a whole lot of Anthony Miller in this game. Thought he was in for a bigger role this year. When Trubisky did look comfortable outside of the 2-minute stuff, it's when it was like Allen Robinson in clearly in one-on-one coverage against like Tony Brown or Tremont Williams. Yeah. That's when Trubisky, ball comes out quick. He looks good. I mean, he looked fine on that one RPO play, but everything else, I don't know, Andy. He's supposed to be getting better, Andy. That's why I worry about him.
It's one game into the season still.
Yes.
Those outside throws are one-on-one throws, and when you're an uncomfortable quarterback, when you throw outside, you know what you're getting. You're getting the sideline and the defender. So it's true one-on-one coverage from a reading standpoint for the QB. So that's not uncommon. Colin Kaepernick used to be that way as well. He'd be all over the map a little bit when he played inside, but when he went outside, you saw the arm talent, and he'd get comfortable finding rhythm throwing outside. I think Trubisky's like that stylistically as well. A lot of young QBs are.
I don't know. I just feel like this Matt Nagy's honeymoon here. I don't know how much longer it's going to last if this offense doesn't get going, because the defense was historically great last year. You can't count on that happening again.
Well, I guess so. Again, maybe we need to add the 30% off right here. I mean, you're sounding all these alarm bells. They're 0-1 though. I don't know what else we want to say. And the defense looked a heck of a lot better than I thought it would look tonight. But again, I think it was bad offense on both sides primarily.
Okay, we'll get to the defense in a second. I just want to make one final closing argument here. Everything we worried about with Trubisky in this offense came to be tonight. That's why it's so worrisome. Like, this was, it was kind of like, well, second year in the system. He's understanding everything so much better. He's going to be reacting instead of thinking so much out on the field. And it was not that.
All right, so I'm going to please you here. I think they will bench Mitchell Trubisky by week 3 for Chase Daniel, and they're going to go 2-14 this year in Chicago. Matt Nagy gets fired. I mean, is that what you're wanting from me here?
No. I just
you win. No, you got this one, man. It's good.
I'm disappointed in the whole thing. They got to go deeper than Chase Daniel. We saw Chase Daniel last year, so they got to go down to who is their third quarterback.
Are you taking my Chase Daniel point seriously right now?
They don't have a third quarterback, so I guess it's got to be Chase Daniel then.
I am pleading to move along. It's one. We're one game in. We're one. I agree with what you're saying, but we're one game in.
All right. Well, let's talk about the defense, because that was good. That worked out well.
Chicago's defense, it did work out well. You know, Roquan Smith looks very fast. I mean, he played fast last year. It's a different type of fast potentially this year. And one thing that, and maybe I needed to consider this more when I'm making my Bears prediction, because as our listeners probably know, I don't have high hopes for this team, because I think their defense was better suited stylistically for Vic Fangio's scheme than for Chuck Pagano's. Now, obviously, through one game, that does not appear to be the case. But again, it's one game. I still think that'll be an issue. One thing about Pagano's scheme is it's a little bit simpler in a good way in some ways. Fangio's a lot of read and reacting, blurry looks and matchup zone stuff. If Pagano does indeed want to emphasize a pull the, pin your ears back and let's go, then a guy like Roquan Smith, who has outstanding playing speed, has a real chance to prosper in something like that.
Yeah, Roquan Smith had a really nice night tonight. I mean, I don't know. It was a night where they didn't have any takeaways, and I talked about in our NFC preview show last week, it's a team that led the league in takeaways last year, and that's probably going to regress this season. And, yeah, I don't know. They were winning the field position battle early, and they didn't get points put on the board.
And their defensive line dominated as well. And that could be a great neutralizer. Because I think the new scheme with all the matchup coverages is a little less conducive to creating turnovers, to add to your point, like we've talked about. But most takeaways, this is the reason San Francisco had none last year, is because their defensive line did nothing. Most takeaways stem in some way from a defensive line impacting the action. And if Chicago's defensive line plays in the pass rushing game every week like it did this week, then that's a defense to be reckoned with. I was a little surprised, by the way, Khalil Mack lined up a defensive tackle, I think on the game's first third down. He had a sack. He bowled over Lane Taylor, I think it was. That I thought we'd see a little bit more moving forward throughout the game, and they didn't really put Mack inside. Not that he's an inside rusher, but you wonder if maybe they want to get a little bit, if they want to build on the creativity with how they use Mack and Floyd.
Yeah, I think technically he didn't get the sack on that play. He ultimately, he forced Rodgers into someone's arms. So
yeah, it was the Robertson Harris sack that I was thinking of, where he bowled over. And then the second drive was where Mack had he beat Billy Turner, and I think it was Goldman or Floyd got the pressure on there.
Yeah, yeah.
But the point is, it's a potentially diverse pass rush with a lot of really good, talented players.
How about Eddie Pinheiro hitting that kick tonight, Andy?
You know, I watched it, actually. I don't watch special teams as much, but I did enjoy. I thought, you know what, be a football fan here a little bit to enjoy this. So I loved it. It was great right down the middle. It's great drama. I even watched a few punts after that, and I think everyone I watched had a flag, and I thought, yeah, son of, I knew it. I knew it. So that'll be it for special teams.
I was kind of wondering if the Bears did score a touchdown at the end, would they go for two?
I don't know.
You're
at home and your defense is dominating. I'd be surprised if you went for two there.
You got all those trick plays in your bag.
Yeah, Nagy, if I had to pick Doug Peterson, who I would pick first to do that, of course, but if I had to pick four or five coaches I think would do it, Nagy would probably be one of them.
What do you think of Matt LaFleur basically throwing a timeout away on that challenged offensive pass interference non-call that we all worried about so much all summer?
I think that he's the first coach of many who will go through a learning experience with it. He was near the play on the sideline. I'm sure he saw the arm extended, and in the heat of the battle and in the momentum of it all, from his vantage point, it looked like a push-off, a clear push-off, and he threw the flag and he learned a lesson on it because it was not a good challenge, and we're going to see a lot of other guys do that. And this whole pass interference challenge thing, that conversation will be mostly moot, I think, by the end of the season. Just like the whole lowering the helmet, oh my goodness, they're not going to let them lower the helmets anymore. That was the conversation last year, and I don't think anyone even remembers that existed as a conversation.
I think the pass interference stuff might be moot by like week three.
Yeah, because other guys are going to do what LaFleur did. It will happen. And pass interference, let's also keep in mind, yes, it was an egregious missed call in the NFC Championship. A horrendous missed call does not mean that you have a problem with missed calls. It's a volume issue, and there was not a volume issue with pass interference. It's not like you sat down and saw five or six blown pass interference calls every game. Fans of hardcore fans might think they see that when they're watching their team play, but you're not seeing that. It's a well-officiated league, and it'll be reflected in how the challenges shake out.
You know what I think best summed up this game, though, Andy? The three delay of game penalties.
Yeah, and I think Green Bay also had a timeout coming out of a commercial break after going three and out. And that was right before the big completion downfield to Valdes-Scantling that we talked about. But I'm with you. Again, was not the best opening night of football, but shoot, bad regular season football still better than any other football on the planet.
I agree. Absolutely.
By far. By far.
So let's, on that note, go back off the field. Let's talk about Antonio Brown.
Yeah, God.
It was still the story of the day. I mean, you were right, Andy. You said this was coming. I thought it was coming, too. I just thought it was coming in, like, the summer of 2021. I thought we'd get through a couple seasons first.
And I don't care who's predicting that Antonio Brown would blow up on the Raiders and it'd be stemming entirely from his bizarre, selfish behavior. That's like being right when you say, hey, I think next June the sky is still going to be blue. I don't understand. I don't think it's anything to celebrate or beat your chest over. And if I'm the Raiders, and maybe by the time people are hearing this, this will be done, I cut bait and take my lumps and move on. You can't deal with crazy. The only thing worse than dealing with crazy is being the same person that's putting up with crazy.
If he was out there, and again, by the time you hear this episode, dear listener, he might already be out there. If he was let go, if he was a free agent again, do you think he'd find another job?
Who would it be with? And everybody says New England right away.
Would Baltimore do it? His cousin's
Lamar Jackson?
They need a number one receiver.
And they need to develop Lamar Jackson. I can't imagine a more difficult way to develop a number one receiver. Although I know, you know, those Baltimore guys, they play Antonio Brown twice a year. They have for a lot of years, and they've had a special arrangement for him every time. And I know they have utmost respect for him on that defensive staff. But I don't think he's worth it, Gary. I don't know how you sell a locker room on it. Because when you do that, when you bring in a guy like that, then every time you're telling the team, we play for each other, we're going out, you know, all these character issue things that you're pressing, that you're imploring on your team, we're going to do things the right way, we stand for this. That doesn't mean a single word if you're going to employ a guy like Antonio Brown, and players can see that.
I mean, I'm with you. I think this might be all for him. I'm scanning the league. Baltimore and New England are the two that stuck out to me as possibilities. I mean, I guess Dallas, they tend to do big splashy things, and maybe they do something. But
I don't know.
Other than that, I don't know, Andy.
I'll tell you what I would do. If I were the Steelers, I'd offer them a league minimum contract just as an FU to them.
That'd make it all worth it.
Or I'd offer the Raiders a 7th-round pick. Well, you don't want to offer any pick now because they might take the trade, and then you got Brown's contract on your on your books. So I guess I would wait for the Raiders to dump him before I get too far outside there.
Yeah, that would be the last thing you want to do. Washington?
I don't know. I don't understand. To me, Gary, it's a waste of time for us to talk about Brown because any layman can so plainly see what's wrong with him that why is our opinion any more valuable than anyone else's? It's not like we're breaking something down that we study here. We all, as human beings and decent acting citizens, can see when someone is against that grain, very deliberately against that grain. So each person can have their opinion on Brown. Ours is the same as anyone else's. It's a crazy human behavior issue.
All right. That's how we end this show. That's how we end this deep dive special then. Anything else from the Thursday night game you want to add, Andy?
Well, I don't know about Mitchell Trubisky. And, is he even going to be in the league in 5 weeks if he's playing
Thank
this
you.
Way?
Yeah. Yes. That's all I wanted to hear you say tonight. And like I said, send questions in, talkback@themqb.com. We'll try and fit in a mini mailbag every week. But as for now, I'm going to call it. It's the end of the show. The MMQB NFL Deep Dive podcast is Andy Benoit and me, Gary Gramling. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Mravick is executive director of the MMQB. Research help from Reed Foster and Ryan Taylor on this episode. Keep up with our entire lineup of podcasts 5 days a week by listening and subscribing to the MMQB NFL podcast. It's free wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, radio.com/10things, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers.